with them. It's from the Bible. So here's a quiz again. T-Rex, the teeth is really long, 6 inches, it's really sharp. So what was its original diet? Was it a plant eater, meat eater, scavenger, or plant and meat eater? Okay, who say plant? Original diet is plant. Okay, who thinks it's meat? Okay, who thinks it's scavenger? Plant and meat? Okay. Like I said, let's start with the Word of God. What does the Bible tell us? In Genesis 1, to every beast of the earth and every bird of the heavens and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food. And it was so. See, at the beginning, creatures were not eating one another. They were only eating green plants. They only eat one another after sin had entered the world, after the fall had happened. And God only gave Noah the permission to eat meat after the flood. God saw all he had created, all he had made, and it was very good. So if dinosaurs were created to eat plants, according to the Bible, and later on we know some of them eat meat, how do we know they eat meat? Well, how do we know their diet changed? So here's one example. You can look at a dinosaur bone, you can actually see the teeth marks of other dinosaurs. From the spacing, the size, the shape of the holes, we know that some dinosaurs were actually eating other dinosaurs. So they changed their diet. Another way we know what dinosaurs eat is that, like I say, in this fossil, we saw this morning. So what is this again? This is just a tailbone of a hadrosaur, or that's a dark-billed dinosaur. And you have a T-Rex tooth stuck in between there. In fact, the dinosaur survived the attack because the bones joined, fused together around the bone, healing around it. And so this dinosaur was walking around with this tooth stuck in his tailbone. That's pain and suffering. Like I said this morning, that tells you the fossil record is mainly a record of an event that took place after sin had already entered the world. It's not a record of millions of years. Another way we know what dinosaur ate is by looking at their fossil droppings. Sometimes we find bone fragment in there, which means they were eating bone and meat. You know, many years ago, and when I first started giving talks to my friends, you know, I was a young guy, much younger than now, really mischievous. So I'll take a piece of dinosaur dung, and I will not tell my friends what it is. Okay? I'll pass it around. I say, smell it, taste it, and guess what it is. Please don't do that, all right? But when we look at dinosaur droppings under the microscope, we can see lots of interesting things. So what else do they eat? In some cases, we see dinosaur bones actually contain the remnants of grass, of plants. And this was a shock, because here we see a dinosaur eating grass. This was a shock for evolutionists, because evolutionists used to teach that dinosaurs grass did not yet evolve, did not yet exist, until 10 million years after dinosaurs died out. Oh, wow. But guess what we find in the droppings? They were eating grass. So it says here in New Scientist, depicting dinosaurs munching on grass was considered by experts to be as foolish as showing prehistoric humans hunting dinosaurs with spears. But it's there. Yet if you go to a museum in Atlanta, that's where we are based, our US office, up to today, they still tell us that grass did not yet exist in the time of dinosaurs. Wow. Okay. Of course, now in the last few years, it's just in 2019. In the last few years, most evolutionists themselves today will admit that dinosaurs did eat grass. So what do? They just push the origin of grass much further back in time where they have no evidence. So in Creation Magazine, we was like, grass eating dinosaurs, a time travel problem for evolution. Show that to your kids. Use that to reach out to them. What else do they eat? We see that dinosaurs actually ate birds. So here you have the remnants of 3 birds in the stomach of a dinosaur. You say, wait a minute, dinosaurs eat birds? I thought that dinosaurs evolved into birds, right? According to evolution. But dinosaurs were eating birds. Here you see that the remnants of 3 birds in there, which evolutionists claim 125 million years. So dinosaurs were eating birds. Here's another picture. They were eating this bird here. This is an artist's impression of what happened back then. So we say here that recent discoveries of the contents of dinosaur stomachs pose a gut-wrenching challenge to the idea that dinosaurs gave rise to birds, because it now turns out that dinosaurs ate them. So dinosaurs were eating one another, dinosaurs were eating grass, they were eating birds. What else did we find? Dinosaurs ate mammals. So here again, three mammal gut, two different species in remnants in its stomach. And so ate mammals, here you see. So that is the creature which they believe, so this is a small dinosaur, that's the mammal that they believe ate this small dinosaur. A couple of years ago, because I'm from Singapore, I went back to visit my family. And when I was there, I went to the zoo. And they had a dinosaur exhibition. And don't ask me why they had a dinosaur exhibition. I didn't see any dinosaurs there. But they had a display. And it says this, dinosaurs didn't walk alone. They live alongside birds and mammals, such as this creature you see here. And this raccoon-looking mammal measured 1 meter in length and hunted smaller dinosaurs, such as the Cicocosaurus. And then just a few months ago, this is in December last year, birds ate mammals. So birds, mammals, dinosaurs, all in the same display together. Yet when was the last time you have been to a museum and you see all these creatures all in the same display together? Why don't they do that? Because this doesn't fit the stereotypical image that most people have in their mind of an age of dinosaurs. But time and time again, in scientific literature, we know all these creatures were alive at the same time. So what do you think caused the flood? I mean, caused caused all these fossils. The worldwide flood. Those of you who were here this morning, you know how I say that the flood is mainly a record of rapid burial and catastrophe that caused most of these fossils to be buried in well-preserved positions. But do we have any evidence that dinosaur fossils are a result of a big flood? So I covered this morning. How does a fossil form? The textbooks will tell you a dinosaur died, and over millions of years, it's slowly being buried in the rock layers you see here. And then due to erosion, one day the bones are exposed. And it really shows that you can't get a fossil forming that way over millions of years. For example, these two dinosaurs were forever trapped in this fighting pose. So here on the dinosaur on the left, they're fighting, and he has bitten off the arm of the velociraptor on the right. And the velociraptor has his claw in the neck of the dinosaur on the left. And they're fighting, and something happens so quickly, they're forever stuck in that fighting pose, frozen in time. This is an artist's impression. Is that millions of years? Obviously not. These are huge creatures. So what caused something like that? Only the worldwide flood. So when we look at dinosaur fossils, we see evidence of the flood, rapid burial, and catastrophe everywhere. So what would you expect to see if there was a worldwide flood? Well, you would expect to see billions of dead things buried in rock layers all over the earth. And that's exactly what we find. And if you're a dinosaur geek like me, you know that one of the ways you find dinosaur bones is in these things called dinosaur bone beds. So what are these? These are massive formations. Some of these formations, they stretch over 1 square mile, okay? And here you have tens of thousands of dinosaur bones all mixed together, all jumbled up in one pile, like what you see here, mixed together with marine fossils like clams and fish. How do you get something forming like that? See, surely all these dinosaurs did not say, hey, let's all die together in one corner. And why would their fossils be mixed with marine fossils like clams and fish? But if you have a worldwide flood, you have water sorting action, bringing these carcasses from huge areas together, mixing them with marine fossils and then burying them together in one pile. In Canada alone, there are more than 2 dozen of such huge bone beds, like I say, stretched over 1 square mile. Tens of thousands of dinosaurs all mixed in together, just like that. But when you start with the worldwide flood, hey, everything makes sense. This is the reason why we find all these bones. They're mainly the record of the worldwide flood. And another way that we find dinosaur bones is that a lot of these dinosaurs that have the long necks, the cephalopod dinosaurs, the long neck dinosaurs, as well as the meat-eating dinosaurs, these are the pteropods, they have that long neck too. The bones are found this way. They take on this death pose. So the heads bend backwards this way and the tail bend backwards in the opposite direction. That's what you see here too. No creature sleeps like this. So why do we find this. See, this was a mystery for many years until a researcher, Alicia Cutler, Dr. Alicia Cutler, she did an experiment. And so what she did is that, you know, these dinosaurs, they have a long ligament that runs down the back of the neck. Well, chickens have the same ligament that runs down the back of the neck as well. Chickens have a long neck. So she took freshly killed chickens before they can harden, and she threw them in cold water. You see, when these chickens are alive, the weight of the body is such that the head doesn't contract back. But now when they're dead, they're placed in water, they're buoyant, they're light. The ligament contracts, and within seconds, all the head bend back and take on that pose. So she said this, although the roads to the opisthotonic death pose, that's the pose we saw early on, are many, immersion in water is the simplest explanation. Wow. All over the world, dinosaurs with the long necks, the bones are found that way, because at the time of death, they were in water. You see evidence of the flood everywhere now? What about armored dinosaurs? This is interesting, because armored dinosaurs don't have a long necks. So how do we find their bones? And this is a very famous one because this is actually the nodosaur, the armored dinosaur. This is famous because it's the best preserved nodosaur of its kind. And it's actually preserved in its three-dimensional shape, which is armor. All right? And the scientists say this was partially mineralized. Do you know what that means? It's not completely petrified. Okay, this the three-dimensional preservation, like I said, the armor and everything, three-dimensional shape, remnants of its last meal, patches of skin, reddish pigment, and dinosaur armor. The researchers say this huge creature, which is 3,000 pounds, was believed, this is National Geographic in June, believed to have been swept away in a flood almost 100 meters and then rapidly buried upside down. Huge creatures like that buried upside down in a flood river. This was in June. Turns out that 1 month before, they found another armored dinosaur. Again, the best piece of one of its kind. This time one is Ankylosaurus. This is the one that has a club at the end of the tail. Again, three-dimensional preservation, with the armor and everything. And they say this has abundant soft tissue preservation across the skeleton, including bony skin armor, skin impression, keratin. That's protein, it's still there. And again, the skeleton was buried, what? Upside down. Interesting, right? So in June, in May, one upside down. In June, one upside down. So scientists began to get curious. And by September, another group of scientists published another paper. So they looked at all the armored dinosaurs that we have found in Canada. And they found that 70% of all of them are found upside down. So what they did is they did some computer simulation on the balance and things like that. And they realized that these dinosaurs are actually, they're top heavy. So when you place them in water, they will float, but they're kind of unstable. And all you need is for a little wave to come along, and they go turtle up. So we use computer modeling to show that Ankylosaurus likely flip over while suspended in water. Do you see where I'm going with that? Yeah. Start with the Word of God. The way we find dinosaur bones, from the way the necks are bent backwards, the armored dinosaurs are found upside down, from what they eat, the fossils, start with the Word of God. Everything matches. But does the Bible talk about dinosaurs at all? Well, the Bible says that God created all the land creatures on day six. He created man on day six. So starting with the Word of God, we know that dinosaurs and men were created together on the sixth day of creation. So if the fall did not happen, something like that would have been very possible. But does the Bible say anything about dinosaurs more specifically? Why isn't the word dinosaur found in the Bible? Well, the word dinosaur is actually a very new word. It was coined by Sir Richard Owen in 1841. Right, that's just less than 200 years ago, which just means terrible lizard. But the early translations of the Bible from Greek and Hebrew into English was hundreds of years before that. So obviously the word dinosaur is not in the Bible because the word was not yet coined. But the Bible does describe a very interesting animal in Job chapter 40. So here God is confronting Job with an animal that Job was familiar with. And let's look at what it describes. This is behemoth. Look at behemoth which I made along with you and which feeds on grass like an ox. Remember, it's grass. What strength is in its loin? What power in the muscle of its belly? His tail moves like a cedar. His sinews and thighs are close-knit. His bones are like tubes of bronze. His limbs like rods of iron. He ranked first among the works of God. The biggest land creature that God created is grass like an ox, has a tail like a cedar. What's a cedar? A tree. In fact, the cedar trees were so big that they were used to build the pillars in King Solomon's palace. So what creature has a tail the size of a cedar tree? You know, some Bible commentators say behemoth, they put a footnote at the bottom. Maybe it's hippopotamus. Maybe it's an elephant. All right, you'll say that. So let's give that a try. A tail the size of a cedar tree? Does that match? What about this? See, there's only one animal that really fits this description. It's one of the long-necked several-pawed dinosaurs. If you do not believe me, the next time you go to a zoo, take a few pictures for yourself. Is that a cedar tree? It's just like a tiny rope, isn't it? What about this? Poor fellow. So there's really only one creature that fits this description. So the Bible was talking about dinosaurs to Job. Job lived before the flood or after the flood? After the flood. How do we know that? Well, in Job, it talks in a few passages how God had already judged the wicked with a worldwide flood. So Job was familiar with dinosaurs, and Job lived after the flood. That means dinosaurs survived the flood, which means that dinosaurs have to be on the ark. And they only went extinct in more recent years. Start with the Word of God. It gives you a different picture of history. But you say to me, okay, maybe it's true, you know, what you say sounds reasonable, but if dinosaurs were around for, you know, many thousands of years before we so-called discovered them in the 1800s, shouldn't people be familiar with them? Well, let's look at some artifacts from all over the world. So here's one. What you're looking at here, here's a wine basin from China. And this is in the 3rd century BC, so way before they discovered dinosaurs in the 1800s. Do you notice what's on the handle here and here? Let's turn that sideways so you can see that. It's like one of the long-necked dinosaurs with a boxy head here. Could that have been a Camelosaurus? See, what's interesting is that when this book, I have actually the book in on my shelf in my office, it talks about all these ancient bronze artifacts from China. And talks about this in Chinese, it calls that a dragon. But when this book was translated into English and brought to the West, the word dragon, they changed that. They changed that to call that a long-necked feline, a cat. Does it look anything like a cat to you? So why do you think they changed the translation from dragon to cat? See, if they called it a dragon, I think that would really, you know, tell a completely different story, doesn't that? Yeah. Let's leave China, okay? Let's leave China. Let's go to Cambodia. So Cambodia, there's a temple, the Thaphom Temple. This is part of the Angkor Wat Temple Complex. So this is the world's biggest temple complex in the world. And it's a World Heritage Site, so we know this is real. And this is one of the temples. You have animal engravings on these pillars here. And one of the animals, and by the way, this temple was built in the 12th century, again, hundreds of years before we rediscovered dinosaurs. There's this dinosaur in the middle. What is that? Stegosaurus-like creature. In fact, we actually have a cast of this very same dinosaur that was made there. Go and check it out. I'll put this on the fossil display later on. How do we get something like that? See, obviously, these creatures had to be around when people were engraving them. So some people say, you know, the skeptics say, this doesn't look like a dinosaur. This must be a chameleon or maybe a rhinoceros, right? But if you look at this, have you ever seen a rhinoceros tail? Again, looks like a rope, right? Like an elephant. Or chameleon has this curly little tail here. But the tail that we see here is thick at its base. It fits what we expect from a stegosaurus-like creature. It has these vertical plates at the back. So some skeptics say, look at these plates, you know, this is not meant to be plates. This is meant to be just part of the decorative design. Those must have been leaves they are trying to draw. That doesn't work too. Because what they don't tell you is that another part of this same temple, there is another one of these creatures engraved without all these artistic features around. It's quite badly faded, like this one here. You can't really see it here, but this is what you see. They don't have all the artistic things here, but you still have the plates that are there and the tapered shape here. All right? So there you see that. So it's hard to escape from the conclusion this is one of the stegosaurus-like creature that they're trying to engrave. So we've looked at China, we've looked at Cambodia. Maybe let's leave that. Let's go to Europe. So famous painting, right? Mona Lisa, we all know that. Painted by Leonardo da Vinci. Turns out that about 10 to 12 years after he painted this, he painted another painting. And this is part of the royal collection that is there. So the UK royal collection, they call that Leonardo's dragon. And what you have all these cats and some lions here in different poses. It's trying to show their artistic pose. And in the middle, you have a very strange animal. This one. Let's zoom into that. What's that? It's not a cat. It's a dragon. But if you look at that, this is not the fantastic dragons that you see with the wings and all that. This is four-limbed, reptilian-like creature. So in the UK as well. Another part of the UK, if you go in the 15th century, Bishop Bell. So in those days, he's a bishop of the church, Carlisle Cathedral in the UK. In those days, when the minister of the church dies, you bury them under the floor of the choir. So this is his tombstone. You go to the church, you lift up the carpet, you find his tombstone there. And on this metal strip, we actually have animal engravings. We have engravings of bats, fish. Here we have a dog with a collar, birds. And in the middle, we have this. So here you have two long-necked cephalopod dinosaurs. But the one on the left is actually different from the one on the right. The one on the left is a long-necked dinosaur, but he has a tail with four backward-pointing spikes. Turns out there's only one long-necked dinosaur with four backward-pointing spikes. It's a Shunosaurus. You can identify the species just from the engraving itself. The interesting thing is this. Shunosaurus fossils are never found in Europe. They're found in China. The same thing with the stegosaurus-like creature. Stegosaurus fossils are actually never found in Cambodia. In fact, when they first found stegosaurus fossils for the first 100 years, those vertical plates, they used to think that it was flat like an armored piece. Yet all the way in the past, people were engraving things like this. So why is it that where we find the bones are different from where we find their engravings? A very simple explanation. How did these animals get to where they were? After the flood, right? So these are after the flood. What caused the fossils? The flood. So where we find the fossils would be where they lived before the flood, and all these engravings will show you where they live after the flood. Makes complete sense. So we say this, if the evolutionary story of dinosaurs is true, this creature should have died out millions of years before human beings walked the earth. So how could their images be engraved on a 500-year-old tomb in northern England? Like this cartoon say, if people weren't around when dinosaurs were there, then who drew their pictures? But don't the dinosaur fossils show that they are millions of years old? So this morning I show you that fossils can form very quickly, especially if you have a worldwide flood. But what do we find in the fossil record? So here's a very well-known one. This is a T-Rex bone that was found in 2005 by Dr. Mary Schweitzer. So earlier on, I talked to someone here who actually corresponded with Mary Schweitzer. So she's an evolutionist, all right? She's not a creationist, she's an evolutionist. And she found this T-Rex bone, because it's so big, she brought it to her lab, broke it open, and she found red blood cells. How can you have dinosaur red blood cells if these things are millions of years old? And she began to look at it, she began to dissolve away the bone and what was left behind. She described it as being flexible, resilient, when stretched, returned to its original shape. So here you actually see this. These are the T-Rex red blood cells there in the blood vessels. Then she began to find it in dark blue dinosaurs, triceratops, and T-Rex. Multiple dinosaurs, not just one example. And then, like I said, she removed the minerals, and what was left behind was flexible, resilient, when stretched to its original shape. Here on the bottom right, you see the T-Rex red blood cells here. Look at that. Looks like beef jerky, doesn't it? How can these things be millions of years old? By the way, when I say soft tissue in this talk, I'm really talking about original biomolecules, like DNA, proteins, and so on. She said this. It was exactly like looking at a slice of modern bone. But of course, I couldn't believe it. I said to the lab technician, the bones, after all, are 65 million years old. How could blood cells survive that long? Well, Dr. Schweitzer, could it just be that maybe the bones are not 65 million years? And then she began to find more things. Here you're actually looking at osteocytes, so these are bone cells. You see that? You see this thing? That's the nucleus that's being stained in there. The DEPI stain test. That's a very specific test that tests for double helical DNA in there of a certain length. It's still there. She said, I just got goosebumps because everybody knows these things don't last 65 million years. Why is she confused? Because she's an evolutionist. She believed dinosaurs died 65 million years ago and she's finding all these things in her lab and she's not able to make sense of it. She said, as the fossils dissolved, transparent vessels were left behind. It was totally shocking. I didn't believe it until we've done it 17 times. 17 times? Who does an experiment 17 times? That's a waste of money, isn't it? But why did she do that? Because, yes, trying to get a different result, but if you're an evolutionist, you know, this doesn't make sense to you. But if you have a worldwide flood, and these things were only caused by a worldwide flood just a few thousand years ago, it's not a surprise that we find these things. After we had the data, I didn't publish for over a year. I was terrified. When was the last time you see a scientist being afraid to publish what they find in the lab? They want to publish because this is where they get funding, right? But she knew the moment she published this, her research funds would be affected. She knew her fellow evolutionists would attack her. In another interview that she gave, she talked about how her research funds was cut and she only had enough funding to continue her lab for another 1.5 years because she had a private donor that came along. Of course, later on, she was able to secure more funding. But why would a fellow evolutionist do that to her? See, they all understand the implications of what she's finding in her lab. And this is Mary Schweitzer on 60 Minutes. We're going to watch a 2-minute clip. I want you to listen to what she says. Okay, let's see if we can get that to work again. Try that.
What happened next happened by mistake. Mary put some fragments of the bone in acid to dissolve away the outermost layer of mineral. But the acid worked too fast, and all the mineral dissolved away. Being a fossil, there should have been nothing left. But there was, and it was elastic, like living tissue.
This is the piece.
No. She showed us video she took under the microscope.
That's really what happened?
Yes.
That's the dinosaur bone?
Without mineral now. That's what was left.
It looked like the soft tissue she would have expected to find if it had been modern bone. This was impossible. This bone was 68 million years old.
So you see this and you think, what? You
say, I didn't want to tell anybody.
You'd be ridiculed,
yes.
Right?
And so I said to my technician, okay, do it again. I don't believe it.
And yet, in sample after sample, they were there. Things that look suspiciously like flexible, transparent blood vessels. She finally mustered the courage to tell Jack.
She said she dissolved the bone away and there were blood vessels. And, you know, I was like shocked. I mean,
how could that be?
How could that be? That's right.
The things Mary was finding inside dinosaur bones.
Look at that.
Blood vessels and even what seemed to be intact cells pose a radical challenge to the existing rules of science. that organic material can't possibly survive even a million years, let alone 68 million.
You heard the irony in the last sentence?
Yeah.
Right, so science tells us this thing cannot last that long, but do they ever question the millions of years? They question the science, right? And later on, they begin to find not just blood vessels and stretchy material, but they begin to find dinosaur proteins. They find collagen, which is it's a structural protein, very stable. But they also find delicate proteins like elastin and laminin in what they claim was a bone that's 80 million years old. And later on, they claim to find collagen in a bone that is 195 million years. That's a huge problem. Because remember what I said this morning about operational science, doing experiments in the lab? We can actually do an experiment. And we know that collagen, the maximum theoretical limit of collagen, even if you freeze it down, in 300,000 to 900,000 years max, it'll be all gone. And by the way, I think this is too generous. But we use this figure because this is the figure that evolutionists themselves publish in their own circular literature. So we use their own figure, we show that in 900,000 years, all the collagen would be gone. But it's there. Why? Because even if you freeze it down, it can slow down the decay, but the laws of thermodynamics still go on. The chemical bonds will still break down over time. But dinosaurs didn't live in freezing liquid nitrogen. Okay? If they live in climates like ours, 15,000 years, all of that will be degraded using their figures, which I really think is too generous. But yet it's there. So it's a huge problem if you believe that the Earth and these dinosaur bones are millions of years old. She says this, when you think about it, the laws of chemistry and biology and everything else that we know say it should be gone. It should be degraded completely. Those skeptics come along, they say, you creationists, you cannot explain the science, so you say God must have done it. You have a God of the gaps. Ever heard that? It's the other way around. Because what we know from science tells us these things cannot be that old. Mm-hmm. If you still want to believe that that is millions of years old, I have news for you. You're being unscientific. This is the evolutionist evolution of the gaps. Okay, they have to work on blind faith in this case. Here's another very well-known evolutionist, dinosaur expert as well. He said that bone do not have to be turned into bone to be fossils. And usually most of the original bone is still present in a dinosaur fossil. Okay, people are not aware of that. So I actually maintained a database with Dr. Brian Thomas from the Institute for Creation Research. So Brian Thomas, he actually got his PhD at looking at ancient collagen. So this is an area that can be tested. He can get a PhD in this area as well. All right. And so in this document, we try to keep it up to date, where we try to catalog all cases of dinosaur biomaterials that is in the circular literature. So top journals like Nature, Plus One, and things like that. And to date, we have 59 documented cases of organic dinosaur biomaterial in the fossil record. Okay, and we don't just look at dinosaurs. What if we look at extinct birds and reptiles and things like that? What if we look at fossil bacterial layers? Turns out we have 123 cases of ancient collagens. Yeah, update that. Because every few months, I have to keep changing that because they keep finding more and more things. And by the way, even if that collagen, like I say, is only 300,000 to 900,000 years max, even if you could freeze it down somehow, background radiation itself would destroy all these biomolecules in less than 1 million years. Wow. So using the evolutionary dates, which I do not believe is true, what is the record holder for the oldest sample? 2.5 billion years. So evolutionists, they believe that, you know, the fossil record is a record of time, right? We believe it's a record of worldwide flood, so it's not a record of millions of years. But evolutionists believe the fossil record is a record of millions of years. The deeper down you go, the further back in time you are looking at. So go all the way down to what it would want the first life that appear in the evolutionary scheme of things, 2.5 billion years, and they still find original organic biomolecules. Doesn't work. So dinosaur soft tissue, which history does this fit best? Millions of years or the Bible? 6,000 year old creation and a worldwide flood about 4,500 years ago. Start with the Bible. Mary Schweitzer says this, so that leaves us with two alternatives for interpretation. Either the dinosaur bones aren't as old as we think they are, or maybe we don't know exactly how these things get preserved. We have already shown you from science, these things cannot be millions of years old. So what's the alternative? Dinosaurs aren't that old. Earlier on, I mentioned DNA in passing, but to date, we have at least three separate papers that have actually cataloged dinosaur DNA. And here you're looking at the DAPI stain test, and this is a molecule that will only show up as a positive test if DNA is in there, double helical DNA of a certain length. So here it cleaves in the minor groove of a double helical DNA. The thing about DNA is that it's very unstable. If you freeze it down, the freezing condition, 6.8 million years, it'll be all gone. Again, using evolutionist date, 6.8 million years, it'll be gone. 6.8 million years, that's 1/10 of when they say dinosaurs died out. So why do we find dinosaur DNA in there? Dinosaurs didn't live in freezing liquid nitrogen. If they live in conditions like what we have today, 22,000 years, DNA would be gone as well. So in creation ministry, we say DNA stands for dinos, not ancient. What else do we find? See, we have already shown that the discovery of fossilized soft tissue, dinosaur soft tissue, DNA and radiocarbon, is a huge problem for evolution and the idea of millions of years. So let's sum up this talk with 4 points, B, C, D, and E. So B, that stands for Bible. We saw from the Bible, Job chapter 40, the Bible talks about dinosaurs, right? And they lived after the flood, they survived the flood, they were on board the ark, they only went extinct in more recent years. C, centuries. We look at centuries of dinosaur artifacts. So there are the Stegosaurus, you can check out some of the fossils out there. We have the wine basin, we have quite a few of this to show you that they lived alongside man and only went extinct in more recent years. D, dinosaur fossils. We look at the dinosaur bone beds. We will look at how they're formed, the quick barrier. We look at the neck bend backwards, the armored dinosaurs found upside down. We look at the remnants in the stomach. They were eating mammals, they were eating birds, and so on. Evidence that at the time of burial, they were all buried in a watery grave, the worldwide flood. And finally, E, we saw evidence of the young earth, the recent creation. We saw soft tissue, dinosaur DNA. Friends, the earth is young. The Bible can be trusted. So with these 4 points, I would like to end up this talk. Do you see why dinosaurs can be missionary lizards? Train yourself, equip yourself in this area, and this tool that's been used to promote evolution, you can use that to reach out to your kids, your families, and your friends. Dinosaurs testify to the glory of God. So some people, no, most people, the reason they believe dinosaurs prove millions of years because that's all they ever hear. But there's another group of people who hear all this and they harden their heart, they choose not to believe. Here is a very well-known atheistic philosopher. And he said this. He said that I want atheism to be true and I'm made uneasy by the fact that some of the most intelligent and well-informed people I know are religious believers. It isn't just that I don't believe in God and naturally hope I'm right in my belief. It's that I hope there is no God. I don't want there to be a God. I don't want the universe to be like that. Why? Because if you're just a product of evolution, well, there's no right and wrong. We decide what's right and wrong. So who are you to tell me what is right and wrong? I can live my life any way we choose. But if there's a creator, we are his creation. And one day we're going to stand before God to give an account for our lives. God has the right to tell us what's right and wrong. One day, we have to give an account before God. There are consequences to ideas. But you can choose to be like this guy, you cover your eyes and say, I choose not to believe. That doesn't change a thing. Right? There's the creator, we are going to stand before God one day to give account for our life. And maybe you're sitting here and you have not given your life to the Lord. That's one of the most important things you can do. Get your life right before the Lord. Because one day we'll stand before Him. God's creation give us good evidence so that we are left without excuse when we stand before him. So what's the best resource to look at? Earlier on today, you know, I promote Creation Magazine because we actually get more testimonies of life being changed from this one magazine than any other resource we produce. So we normally have a dinosaur article in most issues as well. Second one you want to look at, the Creation Answers book. I talk about the top 60 questions in 20 chapters that people have about dinosaurs. Chapter 19, one whole chapter just about dinosaurs as well. Kids, upper elementary and above. I'm not sure if we have any of this left. We might have, or one or two maybe. This is one I would highly encourage you to look at. All the soft artifacts and tissue that we talked about earlier on is mentioned here. And of course, like I say, I'm biased towards this because I'm a co-author. But I think this is actually the most comprehensive book from any creationist organization talking about dinosaurs. So this just came out in September, so it's quite new. Two chapters talking about feathered dinosaurs. Do they exist? Do they not exist? What does evidence show us? So that's one I highly recommend as well. So friends, let's end off in the same way this morning. Let's end off our talk with a verse from the Bible. So Job chapter 40, God confronted Job with his creation, dinosaurs being one of these many things. God was asking Job a whole series of questions about his creation. Look at this creature, look at that, look at that. Do you understand that? And Job was humbled. And we should have this very same attitude as Job. Job concluded in his book, then Job answered to the Lord and said, I know that you can do all things and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted. Who is this that hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore, I've uttered what I did not understand, things too wonderful for me, which I did not know. Friends, dinosaurs should cause us to look at God and glorify God. Thank you.
So wonderful. Thank you so much. We wanted to open it up for questions.